As Unitarian Universalists, we find wisdom and inspiration in many places, Jewish and Christian scriptures and other sacred texts, the arts, science, nature, our own experiences. Our tradition keeps us open to revelation from many sources. Today's wisdom comes from the 16-year-old Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg. This is her speech at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, this past January. Our house is on fire. I am here to say, our house is on fire. According to the IPCC, Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, we are less than 12 years away from not being able to undo our mistakes. In that time, unprecedented changes in all aspects of society need to have taken place, including a reduction of CO2 emissions by at least 50%. And please note that those numbers do not include the aspect of equity, which is absolutely necessary to make the Paris Agreement work on a global scale. Nor does it include tipping points or feedback loops like the extremely powerful methane gas released from the thawing Arctic permafrost. At places like Davos, people like to tell success stories, but their financial success has come with an unthinkable price tag. And on climate change, we have to acknowledge we have failed. All political movements in their present form have done so, and the media has failed to create broad public awareness. But Homo sapiens have not yet failed. Yes, we are failing, but there is still time to turn everything around. We can still fix this. We still have everything in our own hands, but unless we recognize the overall failures of our current systems, we most probably don't stand a chance. We are facing a disaster of unspoken sufferings for enormous amounts of people, and now is not the time for speaking politely or focusing on what we can or cannot say. Now is the time to speak clearly. Solving the climate crisis is the biggest and most complex challenge that Homo sapiens have ever faced. The main solution, however, is so simple that even a small child can understand it. We have to stop our emissions of greenhouse gases. Either we do that or we don't. You say nothing in life is black or white, but that is a lie. A very dangerous lie. Either we prevent 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming, or we don't. Either we avoid setting off that irreversible chain reaction beyond human control, or we don't. Either we choose to go on as a civilization, or we don't. That is as black or white as it gets. There are no gray areas when it comes to survival. We all have a choice. We can create transformational action that will safeguard the living conditions for future generations. Or we can continue with our business as usual and fail. That is up to you and me. Adults keep saying, we owe it to the young people to give them hope, but I don't want your hope. I don't want you to be hopeful. I want you to panic. I want you to feel the fear I feel every day, and then I want you to act. I want you to act as you would in a crisis. I want you to act as if our house is on fire, because it is.
Breath with me. This is hard to hear, which is why we don't hear it. And there's a taboo around saying things that are hard to hear. This is why teenagers are having to hit us over the head with it. I wasn't always an activist. In fact, I spent my first 25 years as a very good little consumer, growing up in a white middle-class suburb of New York City. My dad had a good job. We had everything we needed, and we were insulated. I had no experience with people of color. I had no experience with poverty. I had no experience with pollution or with politics. When I started working after high school, I was free to spend my money and my time as I pleased. And what pleased me in the party atmosphere of the 1980s was to go out dancing and drinking and to spend my money on pleasure. I was oblivious to the culture I was swimming in, the intertwined cultures of consumerism, domination of nature, and white supremacy. I was oblivious to how those intertwined and worked in my life. In 1989, I was working in the manufacturing engineering department of an electronics assembly plant. My job was to create processes for building these very intricate little modules as efficiently as possible and create instructions for people on the assembly lines to follow to build those things. One day, my boss assigned me a project. There was going to be a change coming in how we clean our parts, he said, and he needed me to research alternatives to the chlorofluorocarbon-based solvents that we used in our degreasers. This became my introduction to human-caused environmental destruction. I learned that there was a thing around the Earth called the ozone layer, that it protected the Earth from some of the sun's radiation, and that the chemicals we were using for various things were eroding that protective layer to the point that there was danger to the environment that supported our living. I was jolted out of my complacency with this information, and I responded with fear and with outrage, telling everyone I knew about this danger and how could we have let this happen, and oh my God, what are we going to do about it? My family ignored this. My boyfriend humored it. And my friends kept inviting me to the dance club. I learned a lesson about the futility of impassioned outrage in trying to move people. As it turns out, though, being oblivious to the destruction of our environment doesn't stop it from happening. In fact, it actively contributes to it. The global temperature rise that we're experiencing is a direct result of the continued and increased release of carbon dioxide into our atmosphere, which is a direct result of our burning of fossil fuels and an indirect result of our removing forests that reduce carbon dioxide emissions. People in frontline communities across the globe have been experiencing the impact of the changes already for years. New weather patterns, flooding, drought, stronger storms, all things that have made it physically impossible to live in some places that used to be habitable, and also impossible to grow food in some others. We've allowed ourselves the luxury of not letting this sink in. And now we've reached a point where it is almost too late to avoid a global temperature increase that will affect the climate to the point that the Earth will be uninhabitable by humans. If this happens, it will happen inequitably, as it has already begun, removing access to resources that are already scarce for some communities, and the probable future looks more and more like a dystopian novel. We're not there yet, but the level of action that needs to be taken to avoid it is huge. What will it take to make those deep societal shifts that are needed to avoid catastrophe? Over the 30 years since the opening of my own eyes to the destruction of our Earth home, I've learned that it's never been enough to simply share the information that our house is on fire. The human need to believe that our basic environment is a solid foundation under us that can absorb anything and that will always be there for us. That need has been too strong for us to be able to consider that one day it might not be. And this is what has to change. Greta Thunberg, the teenager who has somehow caught our attention in the midst of all of this said last year, you cannot solve the crisis without treating it as a crisis, without seeing the full picture. You cannot leave the responsibility to individuals, politicians, the market, or other parts of the world. This has to include everything and everyone. But we have to face it. People ask me how I avoid despair. And given what we are hearing today, that's a very apt question. And it's another thing that's hard to talk about, right? We don't want to feel that. We don't want to feel fear. We don't want to feel grief. We don't want to feel despair. In our own lives, in our personal lives, and in this setting of what is happening to the world. We want to avoid them. We want to focus on the hope. We want to focus on what we can do, on the good that can happen. And there's so much good that we can do. We can still turn this around. I don't think that avoiding despair will give us what we need to do that. I think we need to feel that, to sit with it, to go through the experience of journeying through it and reaching out to each other through it to build that strongest web possible, to create the great turning, a term coined by Joanna Macy, for the cultural shift we need to make from the extraction and consumption-based economy to a life-sustaining society. When I despair, and I do, it is words like these from Christine Fry, inspired by Joanna Macy, that bring me hope. I have changed the language of this poem for wider inclusivity. You've asked me to tell you of the great turning, of how we saved the world from disaster. The answer is both simple and complex. We turned. For hundreds of years, we had turned away as life on Earth grew more precarious. We turned away from the homeless men on the streets, the stench from the river, the children orphaned in Iraq, the mothers dying in Africa. We turned away because that was what we had been taught, to turn away from our pain, from the hurt in another's eyes, from the drunken father, from the friend betrayed. Always we were told, in actions louder than words, to turn away, turn away. And so we became a lonely people, caught up in a world moving too quickly, too mindlessly, toward its own demise, until it seemed there was no safe space to turn. No place inside or out that did not remind us of fear or terror, despair and loss, anger and grief. Yet, on one of those days, someone did turn. Turned to face the pain. Turned to face the stranger. Turned to look at the smoldering world and the hatred seething in too many eyes. Turned to face themselves. Then another turned, and another, and another, and as they wept, they took each other's hands until whole groups of people were turning. People of all ages, people of all genders, people of all colors, all nations, all religions, turning not only to the pain and hurt, but to beauty, gratitude, love. Turning to one another with forgiveness and a longing for peace in their hearts. At first, the turning made people dizzy, even silly. There were people standing to the side, gawking, criticizing, trying to knock the turners down. But the people turning kept getting up, kept helping one another to their feet. Their laughter and kindness brought others into the turning circle until even the naysayers began to smile and sway. As the people turned, they began to spin, reweaving the web of life, mending the shocking tears, knitting it back together with the colors of the earth, sewing on tiny mirrors so the beauty of each person, each creature, each plant, each life might be seen and respected. And as the people turned, as they spun like the earth through the universe, the web wrapped around them like a soft baby blanket, making clear all were loved, nothing separate. As this love reached into every crack and crevice, the people began to wake and wonder, to breathe and give thanks, to celebrate together. And so the world was saved. But only as long as you, too, sweet one, remember to turn. It's a both and. The fear, the despair, the grief, they're all there, felt by many people, not talking about it, many people talking about it, many people walking each other through it. And there's also this possibility of turning. So here's an invitation to join the turning. There's a call to bring much wider awareness to the situation. This Friday, the United Nations is meeting on the climate, and around the world, millions of people are taking part in a climate strike, walking out of their jobs and their schools to raise awareness that this is a crisis, an emergency, and that calls us to change before it's too late. Come. Support. Follow the youth of Madison, including some of our own youth, as they ask MG&E for a commitment to a transition to 100% renewable energy by 2030. Come on Friday. There is information about it in your order of service. There will be faith gatherings and youth-led rallies. And keep coming here. Keep practicing love and courage and strength and compassion, for those are the paths to the turning. The interconnected web isn't just a pretty image or a cute toy. It's a truth. The web is stronger when we are all included. And the practice of turning together into the despair can be done together. I think can only be done together. So come and practice that too. Turning together through the despair to the creation of something new and powerful and life-giving. If we are to avoid catastrophe, it will take all of us. May it be so, and may we be so.